Hi, this is the 38th in the series of podcasts produced by the British Society for Haematology. This podcast covers the guideline on the investigation and management of raised serum ferritin. This podcast is being recorded over Zoom, and we apologize for any loss in the sound quality that may occur. My name is Jenny Tam. I'm a consultant hematologist based at Chesterfield Royal Hospital. I'm a DGH consultant, so I do general hematology, malignancy, and clotting. But I must say that iron is the bread and butter of our practice, so I find this guideline hugely relevant. We are privileged today to have Dr. Wayne Thomas, the author of this guideline, to talk us through various parts of it. And Wayne, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks very much, Jenny. I'm Wayne Thomas. I'm a consultant haematologist in University Hospital Plymouth in Devon. And for a good number of years now, I've been interested in iron, either too much or too little. I've been involved in a lot of guideline writing, so the anemia of chronic kidney disease, the investigation management of iron deficiency, but also raised serum ferritin and the updated guideline on genetic hemochromatosis. So whether you've got too much or too little iron, I'm your man.
Fantastic. We are all ears. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because every day we just see lots of referral and question about ferritin, either from within the hospital or within the primary care. It's really the bread and butter. And this guideline has persistently been one of the highest hit guidelines as well. I think we will try to divide this podcast into three parts. The first part being a bit about the science of about the serum ferritin and the lab aspect of it, how we can measure it, and how to define raised ferritin. Part two, the cause of it, and perhaps part three about a proposed algorithm of investigating raised serum ferritin. Would that be okay?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
The highest diagnostic value of serum ferritin is that if it is low, it means iron deficiency anemia. And you can then go on to replace it or investigate if there's any GI loss. But serum ferritin can be raised or normal even when iron stores are absent. So can you just talk us through what is ferritin and what's its function?
Yeah, ferritin is fascinating. Predominantly, it sits within the cells of pretty much any animal. Any organism. It's highly conserved across the kingdom. There are very few organisms that can survive without iron. Borrelia, the Lyme disease, that one uses manganese, but pretty much all other organisms. And that's quite relevant to why ferritin goes up. So it's a microspheroidal structure. It's made up of about 24 subunits, which are called the L and the H subunits, and they sit within the cell, and they're the thing which holds your iron away from the cytoplasm, because free iron in the cytoplasm is not something you want, because it can create reactive oxygen species, the ROSs. And so ferritin, if you like, locks that away. And if you think about it logically, if you're in a position your body doesn't have an awful lot of iron within it, then therefore you don't need an awful lot of ferritin to lock it away. If your body absorbs too much iron, you're going to need more ferritin to lock it away. And there is a proportionality between the serum ferritin and what's going on within the cells in normal humans. So that we know that it's probably actively excreted, but we don't know why or how. But what you see is that it comes out of the cells, and therefore you measure it in the serum. So low serum ferritin means there's not a lot of iron around. Whereas if it's elevated, that might imply that there's too much iron within the body. The problem is that there's this confounding issue of whether it's infection, inflammation, or cancers, that the ferritin goes up. So that's because of leakage from predominantly macrophages, which are holding on to your iron, or it's actively secreted. And There's no such thing as something happening for no reason. And the likelihood is that when ferritin goes up in an infection, there's a reason for that. And it's probably related to some signaling process. It might it will be a scavenging process to limit the availability of iron to that invading microorganism, which is a good thing, because if the organism can't get hold of your iron, then it can't grow because it relies on it as well. So there's logic behind the argument. If you're a humble macrophage and you want to kill stuff, then you can directly kill it. But also, if you pump your bits of ferritin out, maybe that ferritin can help in some signaling pathway, or it can help scavenge iron and stop that organism from growing as well.
Great. How can we measure it?
Most hospitals will measure it in pretty much the same way these days, by ELISA. We should all, as you know, we should all be using external and internal quality control to make sure that the results that we're giving out are in line with what we expect. And we should have reference ranges. Pretty much now we all agree with less than 15 micrograms is suggestive of iron deficiency. There's a bit of a gray zone above that where your iron stores are low, but you're not quite deficient. And in women, normal range is probably up to about 200 micrograms per liter, and in men about 300 micrograms per liter. There are some differences, both during the age and different ethnic origin, but the values that we give, essentially you can use 200 and 300 across female and male respectively to suggest that those are your cutoffs.
So you mentioned gender, and how about other variables? I think you briefly touch on age as well.
If you're ethnicity,
yeah,
we see a disproportionately increased number of higher serum ferritins in non-whites. That's not fully understood. We also know that ferritin rarely goes over the 100 micrograms per liter in children. I think mostly because they're pretty much using up all of that iron to grow. So it'd be pretty unusual to see a high serum ferritin. It's usually, there's usually a very good reason for it, be that infection or inflammation in the child. But then once we get into adulthood, the levels of ferritin do tend to be slightly higher in a man compared to a woman.
As we all know, there are many causes of raised serum ferritin. Can you maybe talk us through a way of looking at it?
We just have to look at the questions we're often asked. I had two advice and guidances yesterday from GPs. Pretty much every week I'm asked to give advice about ferritins. Mostly, the commonest reasons are they're just part of an inflammatory process, be that the anemia of chronic disease, be that a known hepatic problem. Renal disorders, we know that those can be associated with elevated ferritins, partly because there are these inflammatory processes going on. If you look at ferritin, it seems to be correlated with CRP, again, correlated with hepcidin levels. It's all part of this inflammatory response. It's all part of the process of trying to signal that there's something not quite right. In addition, we know that cancers can be associated with an elevation of ferritin. In fact, some cancers, we know that the ferritin correlates poorly with outcome. Higher ferritin can be associated with a poorer outcome in those patients. Whether that is because the cancer itself is doing something with ferritin, or whether it's just a bystander effect, it's difficult to actually know. And of course, there are those significant inflammatory disorders, and for that I'm thinking about adult Still's or HLH, where there are considerable elevations of the serum ferritin, and they can be quite highly diagnostic. If you've got a significantly elevated ferritin in the tens of thousands, then it's likely it's going to be one of these macrophage activation type syndromes, such as HLH or with adult Still's.
So moving on to the next section, we'll be talking about how to investigate raised serum ferritin. Wayne, can you suggest an algorithm for the investigation?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you know, we put an algorithm into the guideline, and I think it's really useful. It hasn't specifically suggested, but of course, it goes without saying, if you've got a woman with a ferritin more than 200 or a man with a ferritin more than 300, the key thing to make sure that you've done alongside it is transferrin saturation. So if it's more than 40% or 50% respectively for a female or a male, then you need to be thinking about the hereditary iron overloading condition of hemochromatosis. But let's say you've done that. So the most important thing is that you've done the ferritin and you've done the TSAT alongside it. And these conditions that we're talking about here, the TSAT essentially is not elevated because you've got to then go and look for the genetic hemochromatosis. So alongside that, it's more about looking for those clinical conditions. And most of the letters that I will get from GPs, it's looking for reassurance that the condition that they can see is truly associated with this raised serum ferritin. They will say, I think this is related to an inflammatory process. Do you agree? And the likelihood is that yes. So you're going to be doing things like liver function tests, because we know that inflammatory disorders or infective disorders of the liver, they will potentially raise the ferritin. So you should be able to get an idea by looking at liver function tests, as well as talking to the patient about things that could increase the risk of liver disease. What's the alcohol intake, for example? And then you're looking for those clinical conditions, aren't you? You're looking for, are there any joint-related problems that might suggest there's an inflammatory joint problem? What's the BMI? Because we are seeing increasingly now evidence that persons of raised BMI, there is an inflammatory component. So it's not unusual to see a slightly elevated CRP, a slightly elevated ferritin. And that's just part and parcel of the metabolic syndrome, but also as part of the obesity process itself. And then looking and thinking about, are those red flag symptoms there in terms of, you know, is this a possibility of a cancer? We know that, as I said before, there are some cancers that are associated with an elevated ferritin. Of course, colonic cancers, you wouldn't expect to see that. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all cancers, just being aware that, you know, some cancers, like colonic cancer, where you've got the iron deficiency, you're not going to see it. It's going to work against that. But has there been other damage? Is there any other evidence of an inflammatory process? If they're well, and the ferritin's not significantly elevated, so it's less than 1,000, the likelihood is that you're going to put it down to some non-specific inflammatory process. If there is significant elevation of the ferritin, so it's well above 1,000, and there is uncertainty, that's the time to involve perhaps a colleague like a hepatologist, who might suggest that the liver function test may not be everything that telling you the whole story, and perhaps an ultrasound scan of the abdomen, going into greater detail about liver risks, etc., or even a clinical review may well be warranted.
Thank you, Wayne. So final tip for the listener, Wayne, what is the most important thing about investigating raised serum ferritin?
So the most important thing is that you pair it appropriately with the transferrin saturation. The transferrin saturation, if it's elevated, it's telling you that the body is trafficking too much iron. So if that's associated with a raised serum ferritin, that's where you have to think about genetic hemochromatosis. If the transferrin saturation is low and the ferritin is high, that is not associated with an excess amount of iron floating around within the body where potentially it could do some harm. We used to think that ferritin played no role in the transport of iron around the body, but we're actually discovering that perhaps it is relating itself to some kind of scavenging process, which is why it goes up and it's signaling various cells, like, for example, T cells. So it's fascinating. It's a truly fascinating protein. But in terms of clinical investigation, it's all about pairing the ferritin with the transferrin saturation. And if it's not elevated, need to think about what clinical condition could be alongside it and then following that through. And then ultimately, if you find nothing, that's okay. You just monitor it. But there are things that will push it up, and we know what they are. They may be non-specific, but there could be some serious conditions to look out for. And hopefully we've put them into the guideline appropriately, and you can read a bit more about them.
Yes, so thank you very much, Wayne, for the final tip. I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. So we had a very quick look through at what is serum ferritin, what is its function, the lab aspect of it on how to measure it, and definition of raised ferritin, how it could vary across gender, ethnic group, and age. We've talked about potential causes in the primary care and also in the secondary care setting, and how the significantly elevated ferritin may indicate inflammatory disease such as Still's or HLH. And finally, always remember Wayne's tip of pairing it with a transferrin saturation. Thanks to the listener for listening. Special thanks to Dr. Wayne Thomas for talking us through this podcast. I'd like to invite the listeners to visit the BSH website to listen to more exciting podcasts from the British Society of Haematology about various important guidelines. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jenny.